New Yorker staff writer Ryan Lizza gives a behind-the-scenes look at what it took to get the current immigration bill onto the Senate floor in his latest article, Getting to Maybe, in the June 24th issue of The New Yorker. He interviews members of the Gang of Eight, the bipartisan group of senators who crafted the bill and championed it, and takes a look at what it takes to put together and pass legislation in that divided Senate. He joins us now to talk about immigration reform and the efforts behind it. Ryan, hello.
How are you? the piece may need to be called Getting to Yes, it looks like.
And why do you say that?
Well, it looks like the Senate's going to pass this bill. So it's no longer a maybe. In the Senate, at least, it's a definite. Well, it can never say anything's definite, but it's 99% likely to pass this week.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about one of the key players in all this, and that's Senator John McCain. And once again, he's playing an important role in all this. Is this a political comeback of sorts for him?
I think a little bit. I interviewed him for an hour, and he was very clear to me that what he was emphasizing was the John McCain, the old John McCain, the pre-2008 campaign John McCain. He made a point of going on about his relationship with Ted Kennedy and made a point of talking about how there were no great legislators left in the Senate like Kennedy, and was, from my view at least, was clearly trying to audition himself for that role. And, you know, I think he's not really excited to spend the rest of his Senate years, this may be his last term, you know, just opposing everything Democrats do, railing against Obama, and not getting anything done. And he abandoned immigration reform. He abandoned climate change, both, you know, partly in his 2008 campaign, but really in his 2010 Senate campaign when he had a tough reelection. And I think he's kind of gotten over his grievances with the White House and with Obama personally. Hmm. And they've actually developed, you know, under the radar, a working relationship, not just on immigration reform, but on budgetary issues and even on trying to solve closing Guantanamo Bay. So, you know, look, John McCain is, you know, he's famous for the enemies he's forgiven in his life. He's never been a really ideological person. He just sort of picks fights. And right now the fights he's more interested in are against the Rand Pauls and Ted Cruzes of the Republican Party, a little bit more so than fighting the White House.
So let me ask you, as much has been made of the Republicans failing to reach out and win minority voters, what did McCain tell you about that?
Well, look, he's one of these people that has been on this for quite a long time. I remember he was doing immigration reform before immigration reform was cool, before he abandoned it, but now he's back to it.
He was for it before he was against it.
Exactly. Look, he's one of these Republicans who argues that the 2012 election was a wake-up call. And that, you know, as he said, there's a downward slope in terms of Hispanic support for the Republican Party from Bush to McCain to Mitt Romney. And, he's one of these Republicans that argue probably a little bit more so on the politics of this than on the policy of it, that he really emphasizes that. Other Republicans like Rubio don't really like to make that argument and try and make a more of a conservative policy case for immigration reform. Rubio staffers argued to me that among hardcore conservatives, they don't really want to hear this political case. But McCain, you know, McCain is one of, you know, like a lot of Republican consultants, like the donor base of the Republican Party. They believe that politically, Republicans cannot be seen as stymieing this reform, or they'll go from the 72%, they'll go from the 28% that Latinos support to, you know, down into the low 20s or teens.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too far off topic, but that Senator McCain and sort of the statesmen of the party who have that view, but there are a whole lot of folks in the House who don't share that at all.
Yeah, there's a big gap between the Republicans in the House and the Senate on this issue. Looks like we'll have about, you know, 15 Republican votes in the Senate for immigration reform. And the House is very different. You know, look, in theory, Lots of Republicans want Hispanics to support their presidential candidates. But if you look at it from the perspective of your rank and file Republican House member who's in a very conservative district, mm-hmm. and more often is afraid of a primary challenge from the right rather than a general election challenge from a Democrat, they might, in theory, want Hispanics to support, say, you know, Chris Christie in 2016. But in practice, they're looking at 2014. They're looking at their own personal fortunes, and this broader argument about the future of the Republican Party at the national level, and really just, you know, at the presidential level, it just doesn't apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the RNC, you know, they famously in their postmortem report on the 2012 presidential election said Republicans should adopt immigration reform. But the interests of your average House Republican are diverge with what's good for the Republican Party nationally,
right?
Which is one reason that the Republican Party in general is moving towards a House-based minority party.
So, well, then let's leave the House and go back to the Senate and go back to a Latino member of the Senate who's figured prominently in all of this, and that's Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. Why? I mean, is it because he's Latino is the reason he's become a critical member of the Working Group on Immigration Reform?
Well, one of the fun things in reporting out this piece was how they built the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone after they read the piece compared it to Ocean's 11. You know, you've got to get the band together, and each player brought something, right? You know, on the Democratic side, Durbin from Illinois, he was the strong labor person, and labor is crucial to getting this thing passed because labor opposed the 2007 immigration reform. Then you had Bob Menendez, who's very close to a lot of the Democratic Hispanic groups, and he cares passionately about the pathway to citizenship and protected that part of the bill. On the Republican side, you know, they wanted a Tea Party supporter, Schumer and McCain, but Schumer, even more so than McCain, really wanted a hard right Senate Republican so they have the broad spectrum of the Republican Party. They flirted with Mike Lee early on from Utah, and it just was clear he wasn't going to be for what they were for, so he kind of got kicked out of the Gang of Eight. And then they really, back in December when they were setting this thing up, they basically, as one of the staffers told me, tried to set the whole process up to bring Rubio in. And, you know, it actually started, as many things in Congress do, with a conversation in the Senate gym. And Durbin and Rubio were talking, and Durbin started to realize that Rubio might make sense as part of the gang. Previously, Rubio had said some things right after the election that suggested that he would never be for a comprehensive solution. That was the key. You had to be for both the path to citizenship and tough border security and fixing, you know, the visa system, all three of those in one bill. Didn't look like originally Rubio was going to be for that. Durbin went back to the gang and said, you know what, I think we can get this guy on board.
I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. So, speaking of Rubio, how effective has he been in winning over Republican support for immigration reform?
You know, I will tell you this. I interviewed seven of the eight senators. The only person that would not sit down with me was Rubio himself. And I think partly that's because his mission right now is just to speak to the right, just to speak to conservatives. He goes on Hannity, he goes on Fox a lot. He speaks in front of a lot. He does a lot of conservative talk radio. And he was basically the group's ambassador to the right. Now, as this thing has moved along and as they have a final product here, I think he's lost a lot of those people. He was doing pretty well. I think there was the volume on the right was not quite what it was last time around, but in the last couple of weeks, and frankly since that my piece came out, there's been much more criticism of Rubio. His poll numbers among conservatives have started to drop. But before that, especially the Democrats, I mean. Jonathan, I will tell you, I have never heard Democrats praise a Republican the way that these Democratic senators praised Marco Rubio.
Were they basically doing that because they wanted him to stay within the Gang of Eight? I mean, is that a testament to how hard he's worked on this?
I think it's partly politics. You know, they're working with him. They're not publicly going to criticize him, but They thought that he was a workhorse, not a show horse, that he mastered the policy, and he would come into these groups and say, look, I've got to go sell this to the Rush Limbaughs of the world, so I have to know this policy, you know, from A to Z. And he did his homework. I didn't get into this too much in the piece, but he was a critical senator in a group that fashioned the agricultural visa program in this bill. And that's highly technical work, and he and Feinstein and Senator Bennett and Senator Hatch sat down, the four of them, worked with some of the labor and agribusiness, and they fashioned a program that everyone could live with. And all the people in the discussions thought he was not that he was, as Schumer said, the real deal. I will say the one criticism I heard of all seven senators that I interviewed about him, the one criticism was from John McCain. And McCain is not a big Rubio fan. That became clear in the course of reporting this piece. And he didn't like the fact that Rubio would very often try and separate himself from the Gang of Eight. So Rubio has very complicated politics here. He wants the credit for fashioning this reform bill, but at the same time, he didn't want to be tied too closely to partisan Democrats like Chuck Schumer, who are not popular among Republicans. And so every once in a while, he would, in McCain's view, he would play these games where the group, the Gang of Eight, had a public position, but then Rubio would undermine that with some of his own comments.
But did other members of the gang sort of realize what he was doing and give him a pass?
It's funny you say that, because I think from my perspective, Schumer, who was the lead, who really was the leader on the Democratic side on this whole thing, and maybe you could argue is the leader of the whole process, the first among equals. Schumer was very forgiving of Rubio doing that kind of fancy footwork. Mm-hmm. McCain, not so much. McCain's kind of a prickly guy who doesn't like the young upstarts.
You don't say, right.
As we all know. And it's rare. This is not exactly condemning someone, but for a senator to say this, it suggests a deeper irritation. McCain said to me that every once in a while, Rubio's inexperience shows. He was the only one that had a critical comment.
So one person who Senator McCain, one person who doesn't irritate Senator McCain is Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
Maybe the only one.
Probably the only. And he's compared Senator Graham to Senator Kennedy. What did he say?
Well, he's obviously they're best friends. So, praising him, is you got to take that with a grain of salt.
Right.
But and look. Graham has been on these in these bipartisan bills before, just like McCain, and they haven't always had so much success. Remember, Lindsey Graham was part of the cap and trade, the trio of senators that tried to push cap and trade in 2010, and that whole thing fell apart when Graham bolted from the group. This time around, Graham's got this two-track strategy. He is absolutely committed to getting this immigration bill done. Working very, very closely with Schumer, very, very closely with the White House, closely with people that, ideologically doesn't agree with on other issues. And then at the same time, he has this whole basket of issues that he uses to just crucify Obama. I didn't put all the quotes in the piece, but if you go look and see some of the things that Lindsey Graham says about Obama down in South Carolina, it's just, it's just this awful demagoguery. But then at the same time, he's over at the White House negotiating the details of the immigration bill. So that's sort of how Graham, works his sort of complicated politics in as someone who is the only member of this gang on the Republican side who's up for re-election next year.
And that's the key. He's up for
re-election. So I looked in my mind, in the politics we have today in Washington, he's doing something brave. He's doing something very unpopular with Republicans in South Carolina because he believes in it. Now, look, he's raised a ton of money. He seems to have scared away most of his challengers in South Carolina, and most of the people who monitor these races think he's going to be okay.
I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Ryan Lizza about his latest work in The New Yorker about the immigration reform effort that's happening in Capitol Hill. And we've talked about Senator McCain, Senator Rubio, Senator Graham. Now we have to talk about the other entity that's involved in all this, but not as publicly as those fellas are, and that's the White House. Can you explain some of the maneuvering the Gang of Eight has had to do with the White House?
So my favorite scene in this whole drama and in the piece is, so President Obama, of course, wins re-election by a decent margin, and we all know big reason for that is huge support from Hispanics. He signals before the election that this is the issue. This is going to be the first legislative priority of his new term. And he also signals that he'll probably find some Republican support because of their poor showing with Hispanics, all of which turned out to be true. He puts a couple of lines about immigration reform in his second inaugural address. And there he is in January, a few days after his inaugural. He's getting ready to go out on the road and push immigration reform, and he has a meeting with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, the folks in Congress who care the most about this issue. And they come over to the White House, and he's very happy to sit down with them and tell them how he's going to be out there championing immigration reform. And Bob Menendez, Senator Menendez, sits him down and says, "Mr. President, we basically would want you not to say a word about this issue." And as Menendez told me, Obama gets angry at Menendez, saying, "You know, these are not exact quotes, but saying, what are you talking about? You guys have been pressuring me on this issue for 4 years. I'm finally ready to go, and now you're sitting here and telling me to shut up." And what happened was the president, then following week, was scheduled to release the very detailed immigration proposal, and the Democrats, Schumer, Menendez, and the others, decided that they were making good progress in the Gang of Eight, and that if Obama himself released details, it would scare off the Republicans. And so they basically convinced Obama to play this very bizarre role for a president, which is to not go out and champion the issue he cares the most about and the one he wants Congress to pass. Because if he says yes, Republicans will say if he says something, Republicans will immediately do the opposite of it. And so it would have made it very difficult for Rubio and a little bit for Lindsey Graham, but more so for the sort of Republicans they were wooing outside the Gang of Eight to be for the Gang of Eight's proposal if it was seen as being Obama's bill.
Right.
Obama, after being a little angry about this, finally backed off and played a much more low key role.
Ryan, refresh my memory here. Am I not correct in remembering that the Gang of Eight and the Republicans got really upset because details of
yes.
the president's ideas
yes.
were leaked,
yes.
I believe, to my paper, The Washington Post, uh-huh. and that set off a firestorm.
So after this meeting I just described, Obama decided not to release the full bill. But that bill was written and distributed and ready to go, and it was all over the place. A lot of the agencies had copies, and so as you said, maybe the Post got it also, but I believe the first place it was published was in USA Today.
Okay.
And that from the gang's perspective, when the White House leaked that, or when someone leaked that bill, the details of the bill were further to the left, arguably, than what the Gang of Eight was putting together.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rubio went out there and trashed the White House for doing this and saying, "Hey, why are you making our lives more difficult? The president's bill is dead on arrival." For as far as I can tell, it wasn't a strategic leak. It wasn't, the White House trying to insert itself. It was, someone got a hold of this and gave it to USA Today for their own reasons. Obama actually called all of the Republican members of the Gang of Eight after that and essentially apologized, said he understood how delicate these negotiations were, and he would do anything he needed to do to make sure that the Republicans could safely would have the political cover to be for this, and if that meant that he needed to be quiet occasionally, then he would do it. And all the Gang of Eight members who I talked to who knew about the details of those calls, and especially the Republicans, Jeff Flake, John McCain, and Lindsey Graham, all praised Obama for the way he handled that and for what he said in those phone calls.
So at the top of this interview, you said that we're super close to seeing the full Senate approve this. Are there any other issues out there that need to be addressed before that big vote happens?
Well, the big one was the border security amendment. Mm-hmm. This was, I think, frankly, these guys knew that this was going to the way it was going to work all along is border security was going to be the big issue for Republicans, and that they were going to save some really, really tough sounding measures for an amendment on the floor that would give Republicans who wanted to support this but didn't think they could the cover to do it. That's now been settled. The other issue got settled today with DOMA being
right.
overturned. And look, Pat Leahy during the committee markup, not to get too in the weeds, but when this thing was going through the committee.
And we're talking about the binational couples bill,
exactly.
The amendment to help same-sex couples where one is an American and the other one is foreign-born.
Yeah, that's right. So Leahy wanted to amend the bill so that those folks would have the same rights that, that the same-sex married couples would have the same rights as heterosexual couples when it comes to sponsoring a foreign spouse, which is illegal under DOMA.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said, Leahy, don't mess up this delicate balance we have with this bill by putting that in the committee. Let's see what the Supreme Court does. I think if they didn't have that argument, that Supreme Court argument, that sort of wait and see,
mm-hmm.
Leahy probably would have pushed harder on that amendment.
Right.
That was the argument that probably won the day. And lo and behold, a few days before this thing has its final vote in the Senate, DOMA is struck down, and that issue is now moot. Same-sex married couples, as far as I understand, now have the exact same rights as other couples when it comes to sponsoring a spouse, and that issue is no longer has to be taken up in the bill.
And we talked about that in our first interview with Lene Hatalski from Third Way. We're running out of time, but of course, there's yet another actor involved, and so once the Senate passes immigration reform, it then goes over to the House.
And this is tough to game out. I mean, you could game it out in a number of ways, right? John Boehner, you know, we all sort of think that Boehner has the view on this issue that is closer to the donor class in the Republican Party, closer to the consultant class, closer to the RNC. They want to get immigration reform done. And Boehner's, you know, he's been cagey. Sometimes he sounds more like that. Sometimes he sounds more like a Tea Partier who is saying, you know, this thing's dead on arrival in the House. My own personal opinion is what's going to happen is after giving the right wing of his conference a number of opportunities to pass some real conservative versions of immigration reform, and perhaps going through a conference committee with the Senate, at some point he's going to be forced to put on the floor of the House a version that the White House is okay with and can sign, and that it's going to pass with mostly Democratic votes and a smaller set of Republicans. But there's going to be a lot of drama between now and that point.
Yeah,
I just don't believe that he's going to let his legacy be the failure of this issue and the Hispanic community in America just once and for all giving up on the Republican Party.
And that requires him to sort of look his caucus in the eye, which, I mean, it pretty much seems like they don't care as much about Hispanic voters in the way that Senator John McCain does in terms of the future of the Republican Party and the future of the country.
I don't think they do, and from their own personal political perspective, it may make sense. The conference in the Republican conference in the House is overwhelmingly white. I don't have the exact numbers, but there are very, very few Republican House members who really, frankly, have to even worry about Hispanic voters. So it doesn't affect them personally. The only issue is how much they care about the long-term health of the Republican Party. Now, that's all the political side. Maybe they believe that on policy grounds, what the Senate passes this week is a disaster. But I think Boehner's, he has some options here. He can let these guys vote on things that just aren't going to pass, but also put on the floor a version that will pass and be signed by the White House. I think he's going to have the next couple of months are going to be very complicated for him, but I think at the end of the day, by the end of the summer, he's going to let a version close to the Senate version and a version that Obama says he will pass. I think he's going to get that to find a way to get a clean vote on that, and even if it has to be done with Democratic votes rather than Republican votes. But I think there's going to be a lot of drama and a lot of positioning between now and then.
Right. Drama and it's complicated are things that very much describe Speaker Boehner's tenure. I've been speaking to New Yorker staff writer Ryan Lizza about immigration reform. His article, Getting to Maybe, appears in the June 24th issue of the magazine. Ryan, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks. We'll be right back.